Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the TMT conference. I'm Simon Flannery. Great to have you all here. My great pleasure to welcome Rogers CEO, Joe Natale. Thank you, Joe, for coming. Appreciate it.
Simon, good to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's been almost a year now, more than a year since, I guess, your nomination. But it'd be great if you could just put your first year in perspective and tie that into what your priorities are for Rogers for 2018.
Sure. If I look back on the last year, there are a few things I think that are remarkable for me that are worth discussing. I think first and foremost, Rogers is a company with some great assets. As I kind of made my way through the different parts of the portfolio, I quickly grew to realize that, you know, across all the various parts of the business, wireless, cable, enterprise, media, there was strength in the business and fundamental great investment over many, many years. As a whole. The second thing I'd say is that there is a strong contingent of middle management. It's fewer organizations that can go through, you know, CEO change back to back and go through executive management change and still keep the heartbeat of the organization going and the momentum going. And that speaks to the quality and capability of the middle management team in the Rogers organization. The other thing I found is that there is a great opportunity around improving customer service in the organization. You know, postpaid wireless churn was 1.2 for the year and had been improving steadily for, you know, previous many quarters. But I think there's still a good amount of work to be done, a good way to go in terms of driving that further. And just generally speaking, around the whole customer service area, there's opportunity to drive a better outcome for us as an organization.
And that was a big focus for you at TELUS, right?
It was. I mean, I've spent most of my career in and around focus on the customer, strategically and operationally, in the work that I've done in my previous role and then in a number of roles even before then. That's been the muscle that I spent most time building in terms of capability. Next I would say it's a very strong base of distribution. I'm very proud of the distribution assets we have as an organization across the country. We, on a regular basis, you know, lead the market in terms of wireless gross loading. And that's a direct function of the money that we've invested in distribution, both own distribution, dealer distribution, and third-party distribution as a whole. I think there's room on the cost front. I've talked a bit about that in the past. Worked very hard with our CFO, Tony Staffieri, to build a cost management playbook, and we've said to investors that we think there's an opportunity of 100 to 200 basis points when you compare 2018 over 2016 in terms of margin improvement, and we took the first bite of that last year with an 80 basis point improvement, and more to come on that front as a whole. So when you kind of look at that broad set of capabilities, I would say that the priorities going forward are very much the ones I've listed in some of the documentation recently, Simon, but one is, you know, a very strong focus on the customer. One is to really fire up all the growth engines of the company. We talk a lot about wireless, but there's big growth opportunity in cable and the growth opportunity in enterprise as well. And then to continue making the right investments to drive the future of the organization and also investments to change the margin and cost performance as a whole.
And it sounds like your overall financial guidance sees another strong year for the consolidated entity.
Absolutely. We think we put forward strong guidance. We think the guidance really speaks to the momentum that we believe we have as an organization. It speaks to the veracity of our growth opportunities across the key businesses. So we're very proud of the guidance we put forward.
And a stable macro backdrop.
Stable macro backdrop. You know, Canada is coming off GDP growth of roughly 3% last year, 2.2% this year is the forecast. Unemployment in Canada is at a 40-year low. We're seeing strength all across the economy, banking, resources, all the key sectors. And, you know, Alberta, which has traditionally been a struggle for us economically, is probably more in a flat to marginal growth sort of level as a whole. And we're well poised across that entire market in terms of our strength and our capability as a company.
And I think some of the household formation and population numbers are some of the fastest in the G7, I believe.
Absolutely. We In our cable footprint, we pass 4.3 million homes, roughly about 40% of Canada. And we're seeing housing starts in the roughly 2% range, roughly 80, 85,000 new homes added to the footprint each year, which speaks to Canada's open immigration policy, speaks to Canada's overall vibrance as an economy, unemployment, et cetera. So really feeling the strength of that right now in the Canadian economy.
Great. So let's dig into the wireless business,
sure,
if we could, to start off with. You talked about the gross loading, but you also talked about the churn opportunity. I think that came to a head a little bit in the fourth quarter with some of the competitive activity. So perhaps you could just put that in context and just, I think particularly the notion that, you know, that was a flash in the pan and that,
sure,
we should see more stable performance in 18.
Let me talk just a bit broadly about the market to begin with. And some of this is a contrast to the U.S. market, and some of this is intrinsically about the Canadian market. First of all, in Canada, there's still lots of penetration growth opportunity. Roughly 87% of Canadians have a wireless device. In the U.S., that's 120%. There's nothing structurally different about the U.S. in terms of consumer appetite or approach that wouldn't see the Canadian wireless market advancing, you know, 4 or 5 percentage points a year as it has been doing the last a couple of years towards U.S. penetration rates. So that as a whole is a very important sort of piece of the backdrop. The second really speaks to industry structure in Canada. There is a market discipline around overall kind of dynamics of the marketplace as a whole. When you couple that with our strong network capability, strength in distribution, and the imminent and current focus on the customer experience, I think we're well poised to take advantage of all that. Right now, if you look at Rogers, we're the largest wireless player in Canada. We typically lead the market in terms of gross loading. We have the largest network that is owned, if you want to look at it that way from a perspective of an owned network. And we have the best wireless margins as a whole in the industry in Canada. And we have plans to continue expanding those margins. So I think there's a great thesis for continued growth at a macro basis in Canada for wireless, and also specifically with Rogers in terms of our leadership in that marketplace. In terms of what happened in Q4, look, every Q4 there's going to be a promotional period. If you look at Q4 last year for the industry, 60% of the volume happened in 14 business days. Right? That's an industry comment. So what we've done is we've, you know, and this is the same in the U.S., created an industry where the intensity is shorter in terms of duration and taller in terms of peak of activity. And with that comes, from time to time, some operational stress. And we unfortunately had a challenge with our IT systems during an intensive 4-day period, and it hurt us. But it's something that we've gotten to the bottom of. We've fixed both the specific issue and the broader-based issue around capacity and managing to those peaks, and we feel we're in good shape, and that's behind us. There will forever be a promotional period in the course of time. It's the nature of the holiday period as a whole.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you talked about the market structure, and it's obviously been, you know, strong for a long time. I think some are concerned that Freedom Mobile is going to be more disruptive as they build out their network and their distribution, and they're, you know, they have the iPhone now. So, you know, what have you seen so far, and how do you assess that going forward?
Well, I'll tell you what I've seen. I mean, we've been competing with Freedom Mobile or some variant of Freedom Mobile now for about 10 years, and the types of great plans and promotional activities that we've seen from them are not dissimilar from what has happened in the past. As a whole, there are, you know, some people say to me, well, is Freedom Mobile the T-Mobile of Canada, trying to draw inference from what's happened in the U.S. around T-Mobile? And I think it's good to kind of compare and contrast the two just for the sake of understanding those differences. First and foremost, and we've spent 30 years plus building a network that covers, you know, 97, 98% of Canadians with LTE. As Rogers, And our competitor, Freedom Mobile, is really has a very nascent network that requires a lot of investment in the future, and very spotty in terms of its coverage across the country. Canada is a big country, as we all know. The population density of Canada is very small compared to the U.S. As a whole. And you know, population density is the most important part of the calculus and the economics of our business.
Okay.
And therefore, building a network takes time and needed investment in capital. You know, T-Mobile, on the other hand, was given a gift with the AT&T breakup fee that it quickly poured into a network and plus some spectrum that came with it. There's something like $5 billion to build an incredible network in a short period of time. So that's one. The second thing is distribution strength. We have about 2,500 points of distribution in Canada. If you look at some of the reports that have been written about Freedom, I think they're closer to about 300 points of distribution. And the category is over-distributed. It's not like people are, you know, the malls are standing up and saying, please add more wireless stores. So there's a sort of distribution saturation point that's existed as well. Thirdly, I would say that, you know, as a big difference, we, as Rogers, have three brands. We have a flanker brand, and we have a prepaid value brand as well in the form of Fido and Chatr. And the experience in the U.S. of the large players like Verizon and AT&T is they've had to kind of, you know, fight in the marketplace against T-Mobile's aspirations without the benefit of having a flanker brand. And there's nothing more powerful than being able to fight with a brand that is a fighter brand by definition without having to kind of hurt the structure and the value proposition of your premium brand.
Yeah.
And so we've had that benefit in a big way. Lastly, I'd say that, you know, the economics of our competitor, Freedom, is really grounded in their profitability as a cable company. And you have to ask them this specifically, but I don't believe that they want to, you know, seriously impair the economics of their profit base in the cable business.
And they're going through a large restructuring.
They're going through a large restructuring right now as well. So there are a number of key differences. They were asked directly on an investor call, do you see yourselves being more like Quebecor or Videotron, or do you see yourselves being more like T-Mobile? And they said very clearly more like Videotron. And go back to my penetration comment. You know, do the math on penetration. If we're adding 4 to 5 percentage points of new wireless customers every year on a base of roughly 30 million or so, that's 1.2 to 1.5 million of new customers in the marketplace every year. There's more than enough headroom and capacity for an organization to come along and take a share of that customer base without having to drive any unnatural activity or have to drive any sort of precipitous meltdown of the marketplace. The U.S. market is, you know, add up all the results of all the carriers, it's struggling with revenue growth. You look at the revenue growth of the Canadian market, it is still moving at quite a clip.
Yeah, very helpful.
Right.
So you talked about customer service at the top, and you know, you've got an opportunity of 20-plus basis points of churn, you know, to best in class. How do you think about the buckets of that and the ability to realize that, and what does the time frame look like?
You know, having been through it a few times, it's not something that happens overnight.
Yeah.
It is more of a marathon than a sprint, I'll consider it from that perspective. And it requires strong and steady progress year after year and investment in a few key things. One of them is customer contact. And the nature of customer contact. So right now, the Rogers organization, our team is roughly split. 26,000 people, about 13,000 support the customer every day in some way, shape, or form. It's half the organization. They support about 60 million customer contacts a year, whether telephone contacts or, you know, in the field visits, or phone calls, or you know, just direct chat, et cetera. So there's a lot of customer activity. It's getting inside the heart of that customer activity, and you know, freeing up the frontline people to do what they do best, which is serve and support the customer. and us simplifying the world around them so that they're not dealing with complexity, they're not dealing with lack of authority, they're not dealing with all the issues that get in the way of doing what's right for the customer. So in some ways, it's very much a cultural revolution that has to happen at that level, not just with the front line, but more importantly with the people that support the front line and the cumbersome world that we've created for them over the years.
And is that hold time, or is that resolution time, or is there particular metrics you're really focused on?
One of them is first call resolution.
Yeah.
So have we fixed the customer's issue or delivered on the customer promise in one contact? Or have they had to call back and chase us, or have we had to call them back as we mess something up? First call resolution went up 5% in 2017. It was a very important statistic. When you have 60 million contact points, a 5% move, you know, do 5% of 60, or 3 million contacts were resolved, you know, in the first instance, whereas in the past they wouldn't have been resolved. And we're going to just keep slicing at that and, you know, increasing it year after year. The other thing is to take contact points away by either having customers self-serve or not having to call back. And last year we reduced customer contacts by about 10%. We'll just keep systematically going out after that. We changed the measurement and bonus plan starting this year. It just got approved by the board a few weeks ago. So right now for the entire bonus program in the organization, 50% of the variable pay from my level down to the entire organization will be tied to customer metrics. That's the first time that's happened as an organization to that degree. So I think, you know, in the world of what gets measured gets done, I think it will drive the sort of organizational focus and the cultural imperative around this is important. We're measuring it like never before, reinforcing it through all aspects of the system and how it works. And bear in mind, you know, customer experience, I believe, and margin improvement go hand in hand. They're not mutually exclusive. They're not opposing forces. There's a view that, well, to provide better customer service, you have to spend a lot of money. I think it's quite the opposite. I think better customer service actually leads to better churn performance, which is better lifetime value, and better customer service leads to less phone calls at about $10 a phone call. You do the math very quickly and figure out that that's a very expensive unit cost operation. And I'd rather invest those resources in providing a higher degree of care and a higher degree of support in the future of the business.
One of the areas you've been focused on is investing in the network, both on the wireless and on the cable side. Can you just talk about your priorities for 2018 and maybe, you know, anything you can say about 5G and how you're looking at that right now?
Well, we've embarked on a program to upgrade the network to 4.5G technology to start. We were later in the cycle on this than some of our peers. It hasn't really affected network performance. We have a great network, great capability. I think what it's given us by going to 4.5G at this point is far better economics. We're seeing, in terms of radio access equipment, far better unit cost than we saw even a year ago for that technology. We're seeing better spectral efficiency, and on top of that, we are installing gear that is 5G ready and 5G compatible in terms of a software upgrade down the road for 5G readiness. So, you know, sometimes it pays to wait a bit, so we're investing in that effort over the course of this year to really kind of take that natural evolutionary path, and hence, you know, you've seen some increase in CapEx. Still strong free cash flow growth, as I described in our guidance, but that investment's important to us as a whole. And that will also give us the right foundation point for 5G. We're starting some 5G trials right now. I mean, the 5G standard was only, you know, half of it was set in December. The other half is coming. And, of course, as you know, Simon, 5G has many different dimensions to it. There's a fixed wireless element around 5G. There's an IoT play around 5G. There's the use of very high frequencies for urban infill and offloading the macro network with small cells, a whole different sort of combination of things that 5G will bring. We're going to test each and every one of these this year, and this will be the year to kind of really lay out what we believe is the right roadmap for 5G in the future. 5G is not a rip and replace in our minds. 5G is complementary to our 4.5G network, and will just add capability and capacity. So don't expect it to be some, you know, large monumental shift like 3G-4G was, if you will. And we have to prove out these use cases and make sure they make sense. We're watching very carefully as to what Verizon and AT&T are doing around fixed wireless. We're watching carefully as to what's happening in Europe around IoT and just kind of using all that insight to drive our roadmap that's unique to us for 5G as a whole and the capability that we want from it. We're very excited about it. We think it'll have some great applications. And, you know, Rogers has always been the leader as it relates to wireless technology. We were the first to really make an investment in 1G and then 2G and 3G and 4G along the way. So it's just natural that we would be focused on where 5G can take us and make sure that we are, you know, first to the pole with ideas and capabilities.
Great. Well, let's move over to the cable side, if we could. You talked about several initiatives. I guess the one that's, you know, front and center this year is the move to the new set-top, the X1, from Comcast. So what's the latest on the deployment to the initial rollout?
Sure.
And then the full-scale commercial rollout?
We're very excited about Ignite TV, as we're calling it. It's our version of Xfinity. We already have a great best-in-class internet solution. DOCSIS 3.1 is rolled out to our entire footprint of 4.3 million homes, and we're seeing, you know, now 54% of our base is on 100 meg or better. We're seeing great take-up in terms of internet services. You know, internet revenue is up 9% in Q4. Internet ARPU was up 5%. If you take out wholesale, even better than 5%. So we feel very comfortable with the internet solution that we have and where it's going. If you look at the video side of it, it's a place where we've been fighting with one hand tied behind our backs, I think is the comment I've used with you in the past, Simon. You know, what Xfinity brings to us is a, you know, best-in-class video entertainment solution. We now have it working in about 1,000 employee homes, and we're adding about 150 or so each week. I've had it in my home for the last few months, and having three teenage daughters, I've got one of the most diligent and ruthless focus groups known on the planet. But it's performing well. The platform is up and running. What we're really testing through this employee trial are all the service and support processes around it, all the changes to billing systems, all the, you know, training of the field force, all the things that kind of come with the platform. The platform is up and running. It's a very compelling solution for us, and not only will it kind of help to reinvigorate the video business and help us stem some of the losses, I think it will really help to drive even better churn performance in our internet business as a companion piece to it. Sometimes you have to go slow to go fast, and I said to the team, once we really believe we've pressure tested the employee trial, then we will migrate in a very kind of seamless way into a soft commercial launch somewhere, you know, in the next few months. And then later this year, we will go with an above-the-line, full-scale, you know, ad-supported commercial launch. And then at some point next year, we will stop sell our legacy TV solution and start the more thoughtful and purposeful migration of our base towards Ignite. And the benefits to us are very important. The cost to support the household it will change dramatically. Right now, it costs us over $1,000 to install a home between gateways and set-top boxes and all the pieces. In our new world, that cost will go down to, you know, $400 or less. So the economics, the cost of acquisition economics are fundamentally different and important to us from that perspective. So Secondly, we're on the Comcast roadmap, and I've had the opportunity to spend time with the Comcast executives in Philadelphia on a number of occasions and go through the roadmap in detail, both what's available publicly and both what hasn't been discussed publicly. And I would tell you it's very, very exciting in terms of where it's all going. And, you know, I really think it'll help future-proof our residential home business. We could never mount the scale of effort that a Comcast can mount. There are upwards of 10,000 software engineers in Philadelphia working on this platform. And you look across the globe at all the other possible solutions that are out there, and they're all sort of in a state of flux or transition. You know, Ericsson's announced that it is selling its Media First platform to private equity. Like, there's sort of a in the world of platform choices, I think we've kind of picked the best one, because the roadmap is very exciting. And it's not just about TV, it's about the connected home and integrating smart home monitoring, integrating all the different endpoints in the connected home and where that will go as a whole. When you couple that roadmap advantage with the cost advantage, and then you add to it the fact that, you know, we can be much more efficient on CapEx in our world. I mean, in a hybrid coax fiber world, our move to greater and greater capacity is more success-based. I don't have to rip up the entire city to get to evolutionary speeds and capabilities. I can do it on a node-by-node basis in the migration from currently 1 gig, and DOCSIS is set to release full duplex 10-gig capability, we think, somewhere in 2019.
And that'll help with the enterprise business, right?
Absolutely. The enterprise business as a whole, I mean, is an important area for us as well, Simon. And enterprise, just to pivot to that for a minute, enterprise is our third growth engine that has been underperforming for us as an organization. We've always done well in wireless. We have 35% share of wireless in Canada and enterprise. It's a great business for us. But on the wireline side, we've underperformed. The wireline side, we have about a 5% penetration. Yeah, we have all the capital on the ground. Yeah. We have, you know, 1 gig DOCSIS on the road, the 10 gig DOCSIS. We've got fiber in, you know, a lot of buildings across Canada already, and they're all, and all this infrastructure is underpenetrated for us. So the reason I hired Dean Privo is because he comes from a very strong B2B enterprise world, both small, medium, and large business across the gamut. And, you know, it's all he's ever known. And quickly he's gotten down to the focus of, we have to really focus the effort in small and medium business, focus on the capital we have in the ground already, and drive solutions into that base. And we think we can, you know, index to requisite market share like any other cable operator in North America that has far more than 5% penetration of business.
Big town base for you, right?
It's huge. It's a huge addressable market for us.
Great. Well, we've got maybe time for one question here in the back there.
Hi. I just had a question, excuse me, about the cell phone kind of plan wars that took place in December. I tried to call Rogers, and obviously I couldn't get through, so I had to switch to another company. Is there any takeaway from that kind of unforeseen rush by consumers to grab lower prices that are kind of more in line with the rest of some of the other countries?
Well, first of all, we'd love to have you back, so if I can get your card later, I can personally take care of it myself. second thing I would say is, you know, if you compare on a kind of, if you compare on a equivalent basis to the U.S., for example, and take into account that all of our inputs are denominated in U.S. dollars, and that the U.S. market has no inherent subsidy built into a lot of the rate plans because there's an equipment installment plan feature offering that's separate. We're actually not far off the U.S. and Canada in terms of that true comparison. As it relates to the promotional activity in December, I mean, there's always going to be promotional activity in December. What I take away from it is, you know, and we've already made these changes, be better prepared in terms of capacity. And, you know, we did very well in terms of gross loading. We had a record gross loading capability through Q4 and through that promotional period. We didn't do a good job of responding to customer queries because of some of the systems challenges that we faced.
Great. Joe, unfortunately, we're out of time. Thanks so much for
Thanks, Simon.
Appreciate it.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.